Legendary doesn't happen by chance. It happens because it's what BetMGM does. Sign up for BetMGM and check out all the exciting new ways you can make this pro football season unforgettable. Shoot your shot with same-game parlays. Call your plays like a pro with live betting. Or bet on a market you didn't know existed thanks to BetMGM Originals. You'll be on the edge of your seat from the very first snap, no matter what type of fan you are. Earn BetMGM rewards points on every bet. Take advantage of football offers found nowhere else, like a second chance on a first touchdown bet. And keep an eye out for rewards dropping in your account throughout the season. Never settle for the ordinary. Sign up today. BetMGM. Make it legendary.
BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. Specific promotional offers are not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text OPENY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
What would it be worth to you to get your dog back?
Hang the bastard.
This podcast contains graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Now, with that being said, welcome to the Mortal Musings podcast.
Right, let's do this.
I've had enough of this heat. It's too hot.
Yeah, it's doing me fucking nothing. I can't sleep. I can't sit comfortably. I went to the shop this morning just to get a loaf of bread. Fucked. Walking back.
Yeah, I heard another podcaster describe their studio as uninhabitable because of the heat.
Yeah, and this was an American.
Yeah.
He'll have got aircon.
You'd think.
And then there's us. Sat in a sauna.
Fucking furnace.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous. It is so difficult to record. It is insane. Do you know it's in the middle of winter and you're like, oh, it's fucking freezing, can't wait for summer. There's no point even saying that because you're just going to say you wish it was winter in the middle of summer.
Well, I did say to you last week, if I complain about it pissing it down or the weather's cold, I said, if I'm complaining about that, punch me in the mouth.
Yeah, I'd rather have to sit there with a hot water bottle, a nice hot chocolate, or a nice mug of tea, fluffy socks on, trying to warm up, than trying to get your body temperature down. That's a different kettle of fish.
Ah, but last winter, I was sat with a hot water bottle on my lap while we were recording. By the time we'd finished recording, my legs were bright red. I'd burnt my fucking legs.
I always do that. Yeah, I'm really bad for just, you know, destroying my skin with hot water bottles. Because I like the heat. You always have the cover on it, don't you?
Yeah.
Whereas I rip the cover off and have this just, you know, ridiculously fucking hot rubber pressed against my skin.
Asbestos fucking skin all there.
Yeah, I should be careful that. You can really fuck up your skin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, fuck this. This is just ridiculous.
And you're not doing well with the bugs either, are you?
No.
You can't, I mean, you like the summer. But no, sorry, you claim to like the summer, but every fucking year you have a fit if a fly or a wasp or anything comes anywhere near you.
But yeah, like that's normal. No one wants a wasp fucking buzzing around them.
No, no one wants it near them particularly, but I mean, it's part of summer. You know, you kind of just, if you like summer, you got to kind of just deal with that.
Yeah, but like...
Well, for example, the other day, there was a fruit fly flying about the house. That's very annoying.
Yes.
Very irritating.
Yeah.
But Neil turned to me and actually said, right, that's it. There's not going to be any more fruit in this house. Like, it was this kind of like declaration he was making. He was that upset about it. And he was so serious until I turned to him, just burst out laughing. He realized how ridiculous he was not allowing fruit. No wonder you're ridden with scurvy.
Yeah, I was sat editing a fucking episode and I'd got two of the bastards at least buzzing around the fucking screen and I couldn't get them and it were annoying me.
So your answer is to deprive me of any fresh food?
No, I didn't say that. I said we're buying pre-sliced from now on.
That is so expensive and it always tastes like shite.
But then you got no flies. Well, then you have to keep all the windows and doors closed at all times.
I saw a Thai killer fly yesterday, by the way.
What about what I killed last night?
I don't know what that was.
Yeah. So I went to a bog and, you know, I shouted Megan over and I went, what the fuck is this? It was flying around and it's just landed on a picture frame.
Generally speaking, in our household, Neil takes care of spiders. I take care of mice and insects.
You don't take care of it. Wasps, that's it.
Did you not call me today to get a grasshopper out the house?
I've never had to deal with a fucking grasshopper. And when I touched it, it fucking sprung. And I thought, if that springs towards me, like I'll run through the window. But this last night, I thought it was an ant with wings. But once I'd killed it, I went and got my electric tennis racket thing. And I hit it. And it was stuck to it. And I looked. And it was like...
Like a small wasp.
It was like a black, it was just all black, black wasp. And it got a right fucking ass on it, like a right stinger. Fuck that.
So to sum up, we are sick of the hot weather and we're both going to develop scurvy pretty soon.
Why?
Because you're not allowing me any fresh fruit.
Oh. In ass, you can like eat it outside.
You're going to make me sit outside.
Yeah.
To eat.
Yeah. Only fruit. You want your fruit? Get frozen fruit. Another option.
I do get frozen fruit. I get, you know, the bags of like the berries and stuff and I'll put it with porridge or whatever. And then you give out to me because the bags take up too much space in the freezer. So I can't really win here, can I?
You had multiple bags.
There was one bag of mixed berries. And there was half a bag of strawberries. And you were very upset.
Oh. So, we have another shout out.
We do indeed.
So, this one is Lily.
This one.
Is that rude?
It sounds a bit rude, but I mean, you're Neil and you just speak whoever the fuck you like. Fuck everyone else. I think they're used to it by now.
So, it's Lily.
Lila.
Yeah.
Lily, yeah.
Lil.
So
the, Lil.
Lily.
What?
Lily.
Lily.
Yeah.
Why Lily?
L-I-L-I.
Oh, okay.
Same way I like to shorten a lot of names and just say them twice.
Well, it is Lily.
Lily, yeah. But I'm saying Lily.
Oh, okay. The only one I can come up with is Lily Pad.
Oh, that's very cute.
What?
That's cute. Lily Pad.
Sorry. Lily Pad. I'm very secure in my masculinity.
Yes. Sounds it. You gotta, had a butt you up a bit there, didn't you? Got another one for you. Lil, yeah? So, like, Lil something?
Like a street name?
Yeah, Lil Mortal.
Oh.
Lily, the Lil Mortal.
Oh. Yeah, we'll go with that one.
Lil Mortal?
Yeah.
Right.
Lil Mortal.
Thank you, Lil Mortal, for your support. We appreciate you.
We do. Your little self.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Right. What do you have for us today?
Today we are going to be talking about the death of Christina Tracy.
Okay.
Christina Chrissy Tracy was 76 years of age and lived on her farm in Partumna, County Galway.
I love it in Galway.
You do, don't you?
It's very nice. For anyone in the UK, if you wanted to go to Ireland. If you enjoy places like York, Galway, you know, the old cobblestone streets and that.
It's just a lot more relaxed in Galway compared to, say, Dublin.
Yeah.
Completely different environment.
Mm. And that's where they do them rings, isn't it?
Yeah, I did actually look about getting us the rings from that store, but they're a bit too expensive, a bit too rich for our blood.
What, 50 quid?
No, they did have like plain silver ones, but it wasn't really the kind that you'd like. So to get one more the style you'd want.
For my masculinity.
For your fragile masculinity, yes. We'd have to spend out quite a bit.
Mm.
And I don't think the budget will stretch that just yet.
Mm.
Christine was described as a very kind, quiet, inoffensive person. She was said to have a wonderful Irish sense of humour and a love of animals. Quote, by all accounts, a terrific lady, ahead of her time on farming knowledge and expertise, and a boss in a house of men. A sociable woman who lived life to the fullest and enjoyed having a chat with her neighbours. Most likely over a cup of tea and a few biscuits, with her beloved Jack Russell Bradley laying nearby in one of his usual spots, of either underneath the range in her kitchen or sat on his cushion on the sofa. Now, Bradley was like a child to Christina, and every time she would leave her home, she would say to him, bye Bradley, mind the house.
What does that sound like?
Myself.
Yes.
Well, I was actually about to say that, a love of dogs, like a kid to her, I've got that in common with Christina.
Tea and biscuits.
Well, yes, but something you have in common with Christina, Neil. Say if you were to stop by for a cup of tea and you brought Christina a pack of own brand biscuits, say from Aldi.
Mm.
She'd have to make a comment. A bit of a snob like yourself, Neil, when it comes to the brands. She would often refer to, like, say, Aldi brand biscuits as moldy biscuits.
I get that.
She would still eat them now.
You can.
But you'd have to get a choice.
You can buy them and they're already soft.
Yeah, well, Christina felt the same way. She wasn't having, well, I say she wasn't having it. She'd still slobber them. But make a comment.
Yeah.
Mm.
No,
you don't want to be too ungrateful now. You have to let the person know they've done wrong. They've displeased you. But you're not rude enough to turn away the biscuit.
Yeah.
Mm.
No, I'm not going to be that rude. Like, custard creams, that's...
Oh, they're the same.
That doesn't matter what brand it is.
Mm.
But...
What about a ginger nut?
I'm not really bothered about ginger nuts.
I'm not, but every once in a while, I'll mill through a packet. Like once every 4 years, I get a packet. I really enjoy it.
Tell you one, what is a better option, the cheaper option. So I like a Snickers bar. But if you go to, I can't remember if it's Aldi or Lidl, they do one called Racer Bars. They're better than Snickers. That's their cheap version of a Snicker.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not bad. What's the other one? What's the Mars bar one?
Delight.
I don't know.
Do you remember the Mars Delights?
Yes, I fucking do. I still think about them. Keeps me up at night.
Them and Turkey Twizzlers. My life was over when they stopped doing them.
I've never had a Turkey Twizzler.
The Brits are going to fucking come in and comment.
I don't even know if they were a thing over here. I don't remember them if they were.
They didn't taste the turkey.
Yeah, they look pretty diabolical. I don't think they were even that good. I think it's just you are so angry that they were taken away from you.
No.
Oh.
It was heaven twisted up.
Christina, along with her brothers, farmed land of 140 acres at Derry Heiney, and she also owned another farm near Kiltormere. But after the death of Willie Tracy, Christina's brother, in 2009, his land was split between Christina and the children of their sister Maureen, who had already passed away. Between the siblings, they agreed that Michael Scott, Christina's nephew, would take joint ownership alongside Christina. In the weeks leading up to the death of Willie Tracy, it was reported that her nephew Michael, quote, took efforts to frustrate efforts in regards to Willie attending his solicitor to finalise his will. It's a bit sus.
I think there's always one like that in a family.
No, there fucking shouldn't be, though, should there?
No, there shouldn't. But there's always one who's waiting for people to die to see what they can get. Vultures.
After the deaths of Christina's brothers, Michael not only took over ownership of half the land at Derry Heiney, but Christina would also lease the other half to him, as well as the land at Kiltormere. And he would pay her €6,000 a year for the land.
That's it?
Yeah. Bit low, isn't it?
Bit low?
Well, moving forward to early 2017, the land went up for auction and Michael did not bid to continue his lease of the land. As a new tenant took over the land in Kiltormir, they ran into a few issues. There was damage which had been caused to fencing, gates left open and cattle being let out. It was thought that Michael did this in an attempt to interfere with the letting of the land and to intimidate potential tenants, but he denied any involvement. By Christmas time of 2017, Christine had been in contact with her solicitor. She made an application to split the land at Derryhiney. According to Christina's friend, Regina Donoghue, Michael had been attempting to drop leases on his own terms to rent the land belonging to Christina. He wanted to continue with his previous arrangement and pay $6,000 for the year under a six-year contract. But according to Christina's solicitor, the value of the land was placed at $13,000, quite a jump from the $6,000 that Michael had wanted it for.
Yeah. Even 13 sounds fucking amount.
I don't fucking know, but yeah, to me, it didn't sound a lot.
But then again, you do get people saying, don't buy a house, buy a patch of land, and then build on it.
Yeah.
They say it's cheaper.
Mm. I mean, regardless of the true value, it seems Michael is a bit of a chancer. Things take a bit of a turn on the 23rd of February, 2018. Christina's beloved Jack Russell Bradley disappears. She was devastated. Like we previously mentioned, Bradley was like a child to Christina. She was so distraught from the loss of her dog that she had to be put on medication to deal with the stress and anxiety. Even the priest at Mass included a prayer for Bradley's safe return.
Bet that worked. It's a bit fucking strong, isn't it? Medicating her because her dog's ran off.
Well, she was already dealing with quite a bit of stress to do with the land.
Yeah.
And, you know, this dog was her baby. She was an elderly woman. I think it was just a bit too much for her to take. The thing is, though, Bradley can't have just run away or even been taken by someone passing by the farm. Christina always left Bradley inside the house with the doors locked, and he was never left out to roam the grounds. Christina believed that Michael was the cause of her dog's disappearance or death. A few days after the disappearance of Bradley, Christina confided in her friend Regina that Michael had asked her, quote, what would it be worth to you to get your dog back?
Hang the bastard. So it's him?
I mean, it does seem that way, doesn't it?
String him up.
Previous to the disappearance of Bradley, Christina had told agricultural consultant Declan McHugh that she had feared for her life and for her dog. During all of the disputes relating to the land, it was said that Michael had subjected Christina to, quote, verbal abuse and mental torture. Both the HSE and the Gardaí had been notified about concerns regarding Christina's welfare due to her poor relationship with Michael. HSE officials warned him to stop putting financial pressure on Christina. Her solicitor requested that he cease threatening her, and the Garda had been called, but Christina did not wish to make a formal complaint.
So she went wrong. She should have kicked off a fuss.
Unfortunately, yeah. Even if you feel like it's not going to do anything immediately or you don't have enough evidence, always go and report it. Have that fucking paper trail there.
Yeah, exactly.
A carer named Katrina said that she'd arrived to see Christina one of the days and she heard Michael shouting and banging on the table. But as soon as he saw her, he left. Another carer named Susan, she asked that she not have to work in that environment as she found it to be very draining. She stated that she'd started to notice rubbish piling up in the yard. Michael would usually remove it, but it since stopped. There was also another incident where the oil to her home had been turned off during severe weather conditions. Now, when the heating had been turned off, I actually checked the dates. This was during the Beast from the East snowstorm.
Oh, shit.
Imagine doing that. I mean, imagine doing that to anyone, but a 76-year-old woman.
Yeah. Well, no. Couldn't imagine doing it. Yeah, I couldn't imagine doing it.
I get what you mean. Susan had also said that she had tried to get Christina up and moving, you know, going for walks outside of her home. But Christina didn't want to even leave the house in case she ran into Michael. Another person said that they had witnessed Michael become enraged and warned that, quote, this will end badly in reference to the dispute with Christina.
Threatening an old biddy.
Well, I mean, I would take this will end badly as a threat.
Yeah.
But that's just me. Given her concerns, Christina decided to change the locks and install an alarm system with cameras. On the 27th of April, 2018, Christina was said to have been in good form and was sat in her kitchen listening to music on the radio. She was going to be going out shopping that day with her friend Regina and was looking forward to getting out of the house for a while. But when Regina arrives at Christina's home, she made a horrifying discovery. She found Michael, along with his friend, Francis, and Christina was dead, laid in the yard in front of her home. Flesh had been, quote, ripped completely from her left forearm and strewn onto the yard in front of her hand.
The fuck? What animals do they have on this farm?
Her internal organs and pelvis had been crushed. There was tire marks on her trousers and blood on her legs and face. Regina immediately lunged at Michael, but Frances held her back. So, what exactly happened that day?
I'm hoping you're going to fucking spill the beans.
Well, Michael was on the land that day working, and he was operating a teleporter. And if you're unaware, as I was, a teleporter is a piece of machinery used for lifting and placing large heavy loads of weight. Kind of like a forklift, but on a larger scale for use in farming or construction. Yeah,
it's like a tractor with forklift arms.
Yeah, basically.
Basically exactly what it looks like, actually. It's a tractor, and it's got forklift arms.
Well, it was a big one, I think. Just a big one arm from what I saw, I think. See that? Like a trunk.
She was basically just mimicking an elephant's fucking trunk at me then. Just to give listeners a visual.
Yeah. Now, I'm not sure what model they had on their farm. As far as I'm aware, it was a JCB. So I did look up JCB models, and one of them that I found was over 10 tons.
Okay.
So big, heavy vehicle.
Yeah.
And a piece of equipment that size and that weight should be used with a great deal of care. Michael said that he was reversing the teleporter across the yard when he felt a, quote, thump. He said that he thought he may have hit a trailer, so he moves the teleporter to level ground to avoid it rolling. He then exits the machinery to see Christina laid on the ground. The first call that Michael makes is to his friend, Francis Hardiman.
Not 999.
No.
Well, that's strike one.
Strike
Well, actually, no, strike fucking two. You just ran her over.
Michael does make a comment about 999.
Useless.
What?
What does he say? The useless?
No. No, don't you fucking worry. It's a good one. It's a really fuck... Well, it's not a good one. It's a fucking horrific excuse, but... But anyway, when Francis arrives, he sees Michael crying and holding a shotgun and repeatedly saying, I can't deal with this. Francis said that he believed, had he not taken the gun from Michael, that he would have shot himself. Francis said that Michael continued roaring and crying and said, quote, I can't live with what happened to me.
Right. Two things. He wouldn't have shot himself. He'd have shot himself before your man fucking arrived. Mm-hmm. If he was going to shoot himself, why would he wait for a witness? No, mm-hmm. he'd have already shot himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just thinking about himself. That.
Yeah.
Why is this happening to me?
I can't live with what happened to me.
What happened to you? You ran an old video.
Well, as we know, Christina had been trying to settle this land dispute and had been in communication with her solicitor. And on the day that Christina died, Michael had received a letter from an agricultural consultant stating that Christina was applying for a single farm payment and that he was not to claim payments for parcels of land on the farm.
Oh.
So it's not looking good. Not looking good here for you, Mikey.
No. Well, why is it happening to him?
Couldn't have happened to a nicer man. During the investigation into Christina's death, Michael was said to have told the Garda, quote, a number of self-serving lies during questioning. He was said to have shown no remorse for what he had done. He told the Gardaí that his relationship with Christina was, quote, the finest.
I'm really not starting to like this, Michael.
But, I mean, why even say that? We know it wasn't.
Yeah.
There's multiple people who can say it wasn't.
Yeah.
There's solicitors, there's consultants, yeah. There's like, come on. He also went on to say that there was no big issues between them and that they only ever argued about the more small, insignificant things.
What, like, who had the last roller?
I mean, the last mouldy biscuit,
not,
I assume.
Not the land.
Exactly.
All of the land.
It's like the lies he's telling, they're not even kind of like leaving room for a grey area. It's basically just like, no, that's not true, no.
Does that, right, does it, the sort of image I'm getting, because I haven't seen a picture of him, does he look like your man, Paddy, I can't remember his surname, the Traveller?
No.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Paddy?
Yeah, he was on like Celebrity Big Brother and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Okay. That's what I'm getting.
When asked about the letter he'd received that morning, he told the Gardaí that the letter hadn't bothered him and he just continued about his day as normal.
Sure.
He told them that after realising he'd hit Christina, he went to check on her. He said she was still breathing, that he saw her moving, and that he did not notice any injuries to her.
What?
The skin had been ripped from her arm. But Michael's saying he didn't notice any injuries.
A 10-ton vehicle's just gone over.
It's also how he describes it. I felt a thump. Like Michael. So although he thought she was still alive and claimed to have seen no visible injuries, he said he didn't help her up as he wouldn't have been able to do so on his own. Now, as for why he chose to call a friend instead of emergency services, he said that he did not know you could ring 999 for an ambulance to be called to the scene. Quote, I'm not very well upon technology. I didn't know you could ring an ambulance as well as the fire brigade on 999. I thought you would have to ring the hospital in Ballinasloe, and I had no number for a doctor.
But this is 2018.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not 1918.
Yeah. And Michael's in his early 50s, like. Is he early 50s? Michael's in his 50s. Like,
yeah.
He's not an old fella. Do you know what I mean?
Fucking not, simple by the sounds
not,
of it.
I'm not saying because you were in, say, your 70s that you wouldn't know to ring 999 for fuck's sake. But it's not a fair enough justification.
I'm sorry. Right. If I was a guard on scene and I was fucking getting this statement, if he said that, I just got fuck off. Get the cuffs on him. It's fucking... Nah. Shoot. Where's that shotgun?
So, given the magnitude of bollocksology that was spewing from Michael's mouth, I don't think it's going to come as any surprise that he was put on trial for the murder of Christina. Michael pleaded not guilty, and he was granted bail and was not held in custody during the trial. The prosecution believed that Michael had intentionally hit Christina because of their dispute over the land. Quote, a deliberate act of murder out of a sense of entitlement and for revenge.
Definitely.
I mean, I'm leaning that way, yeah.
Leaning? I fell ass or tit.
At this point, it feels blatantly obvious, no?
Yes.
Yeah. The defence said it was a tragic accident and argued against the prosecution's suggestion that Michael had reason to kill by stating, quote, it begs the question, why didn't he act sooner?
Do you know what I thought you were going to say? What was she doing standing there? It was her act of committing suicide or something stupid like that.
I mean, not quite, but there are kind of... there is kind of a question put forward of like, oh, well, he wasn't expecting her to be there.
At a home?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, in his defence, she didn't want to leave the house.
This is what... It was kind of said that, like, Christina wasn't usually stood around there. She wouldn't have usually been there.
How dare she?
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, what?
She probably went outside because she'd seen this big fucking digger driving around. She's like, the fuck is that doing? Why is that driving around my land? And then it came at her.
Why is it on two wheels? In regards to the injuries that Christina had sustained, and due to the extent of her injuries, it was thought that she'd been hit by the machinery multiple times. Okay?
I just kept backing over her.
That's what the argument was by police and then obviously the prosecution. But an engineer hired by the defence spoke at the trial. He said that he believed this claim was, quote, particularly unsupported, and that her injuries could have been caused by a simple movement. He said that there was only one clear print which had been left on Christina's trousers. He went on to say that the other marks left were, quote, very difficult to interpret.
Do you know why? Because it had ripped her fucking skin off.
Well, in relation to the degloving injury to her arm.
Is that what they said?
Degloving.
Degloving. Sarcastic bastards.
Well, no, degloving, it's the type of injury that she's sustained. The flesh being ripped from her arm.
Oh, I thought they were, like, being sinister about the skin coming off the hand like a glove.
Thought they were being a bit tactless.
Yeah.
No, you can stand down. That is a term used.
Okay. Never heard of that. Skinning. Never heard of that.
Well, they said that this could have happened in one motion. And it was stated that there was no evidence that the machinery had rolled over Christina a second time. The injury to Christina's left arm was described as, quote, not consistent with the vehicle reversing over the deceased, coming to a stop and moving forward.
Well, I would have thought a 10-ton vehicle, there would be a big difference between it going over you once and going over you twice. Visually.
Well, like I said, there was very clear marks on her trousers, and obviously there was some other ones, but they basically said we can't use them to say absolutely it was a second one. There was only one very clear mark.
Yeah. Okay.
The engineer said that, in his opinion, all of Christina's injuries were caused by, quote, one movement. And this was of the back and front wheels.
One was enough.
It was also said that the damage caused to her body did not require any unusual use of the teleporter. Quote, just driving the vehicle backwards will do it.
Yeah, but end of the day, he was driving the transporter.
Yes, he was.
So he's done it.
No. It's not an argument of whether or not he has killed Christina. It's an argument of intent.
Okay. But was she stood in the middle of a field, or was she stood by her ass?
She was stood less than 50 metres from her door.
So what was he reversing, a fucking 10-ton fucking truck that close to her house?
Well, they live on a farm.
That's very close to the door. So that's where the dog's gone.
Well, it can't be that, because the dog was locked inside the house.
Oh, yeah.
Christina's clothing had become gathered towards her shoulders, which suggests that she was, quote, struck and knocked down and hit the concrete hard, at which point the left rear wheel ran over her right hand, and before Mr. Scott had a chance to stop, the left front wheel travelled over her back while he was braking or stopping the machine.
That would be the little bump. Is that how he described it?
Thump.
Thump. Little thump.
He described how the injuries was more consistent with, quote, a far more aggressive action and could be consistent with the rotation of the wheel on the limb. But he went on to clarify that, by aggressive, he was not commenting on the intent of the driver but the high torque of the vehicle, which allows the machinery to switch from reverse to forward quite quickly. So in terms of the injury to her arm, it's not so much an issue of back and forth as in the torque of the vehicle would, I don't want to sound tasteless here, but essentially ripped the flesh from her arm. So I understand trying to disprove the repeated attacks on Christina, you know, the kind of overkill side of it. But whether he hit her once or twice is kind of besides the point. He hit her and killed her. We know this, regardless of how many times he attempted to run her over. He would have known a vehicle this large could kill her. Surely if he had hit her multiple times, that would just prove overkill.
Yeah.
The bigger point of this case is, was this act intentional or not?
Yes. I want there. And I'm saying yes. I'd put my reputation as a true crime podcaster on it, yes.
Well, the Gardaí believed that Michael would have been able to see Christina from his position, but the defence argued that Christina would not have been visible to him from inside the cab. When he entered the vehicle, he looked over his right shoulder to reverse, but Christina was to his left and therefore not in his line of sight.
But it's a long time since I've been in like tractors and stuff, but as far as I know, when you're sat in that seat, everything's very open.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got fucking mirrors all over the fucking place. Well, fuck me, they're doing a forklift.
Well, it was said that Michael reversed across the yard for a period of 10 seconds. 10 seconds seems like a long time to me, and a very long time when you're not able to see where you're going.
Yeah, it's careless, it's reckless.
No, but 10 seconds.
Yeah, but you don't know how hard they are to turn.
What?
So, 10 seconds to reverse it, but you don't know how long it'd take to do like a 3-point turn in one of them.
But what's that got to do with it?
Well, that's probably why he was reversing, because...
No, I'm not arguing of whether or not he should have been reversing. I'm saying to claim that you could not see for 10 seconds.
Oh, okay.
And like you said, it's in the yard. It's right by her home. She lives on the farm. You have to have the extra duty of care.
Yeah.
More so, you know? Christina had walked 45 meters from her door to where her body was found. Now, if Michael had not been expecting anyone to be in the yard, he might not have looked before even getting into the vehicle. But as it was stated during the trial, when driving a vehicle of this mass, you have an enormous duty of care. Although the Gardaí did carry out tests, and every time found that Christina would have been in his sight, it was argued that the tests were not representative of the true situation. Which, I can take their point. To view from the standpoint of a stationary vehicle versus reversing on an uneven ground which is described as rippled and corrugated with many bumps and hollows, quote, a distinct jaunty feel. It is a slightly, I'm not completely buying it, but I think there is a point to argue there.
Yeah. Do you know what they could have done as well? You know, to do with checking if it was once or twice or whatever. Now, this is going to sound a bit morbid. Get a dead pig, chuck it on the floor, and run over it, and see what state it's in. And then do it again, and see what state it's in.
But they're not arguing that a 10-ton vehicle can't do the damage in one movement.
Right.
It was more so that they were trying to compare it against the track marks.
Okay.
But like her organs had already been crushed. The right. damage was severe. From one movement.
Yeah, but to prove if he'd done it more than once. Because then it's deliberate. It's like 100% deliberate.
Yeah.
That's what I'm getting at. Just but run again, over a dead pig.
Get one of them cadaver pigs, see if there's any fair ones about. It was also noted that the windows were coated in, quote, field stuff, dust and dirt. And that there was blind spots caused by the sun hitting off the dirt on the back window, causing a glare and obstructing his view. Positioning of the steering wheel was also considered. In the teleporter, the steering wheel is mounted on the left-hand side, and therefore you'd be quicker to turn to your right to check the rear view. But Michael's vision was also impaired in his right eye, which an optometrist did testify to. Another aspect which seems odd to me is that Christina, whenever she would leave her house, she was always wearing either her jacket or a body warmer, but that day she was wearing neither. She'd also left her walking stick in the house, and her alarm pendant did not sound. If he didn't know to ring 999, why didn't he at least sound the alarm on her pendant?
Because he thought that was to call a fucking waiter.
Did your granny have one of the alarm yokes?
Yeah.
Is it not usually a bracelet or something?
No, she had a cord on wall.
But like one of the ones you wear.
Oh, no, I don't think she wore. No, she didn't wear one. I think she was supposed to. You know, but she would.
Didn't go with a cardigan.
I ain't bloody wearing that. Yeah, there were a cord on wall and she had it tied up as well. It's supposed to be low to the ground. Yeah. So if she falls over, she can pull it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fucking tied up.
Well, that's fucking helpful.
I think I pulled it as a kid.
No.
I got levered for that.
What happens? Is it ambulance or is it like a care provider, like
ambulance.
A healthcare provider? Oh, okay. I don't actually know. None of my grandparents ever had one there.
Oh.
Yeah. In terms of forensic evidence, both Michael and Christina's clothes were examined, and there was no blood or clothing fibres found to be exchanged between them, which would indicate that he had made no attempt to help her. And you could argue that he didn't want to move her in case he caused more injury or damage. But he also didn't seek immediate help.
No. Like, this is what I mean. Right. whether you did it deliberately or not, the initial impact, you saying, I didn't ring 999 because I didn't think you could get an ambulance that way. You lying bastard. You're lying about everything.
Mm-hmm.
Sling him in. Like, sling him in knicker. In, wow.
Sling him in the knickers.
Sling him in.
Sling him in the nick. Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't sit well with me, that comment.
No.
At all. His seemingly sinister comments and or involvement regarding the disappearance of Christina's dog were not heard by the jury, as it was ruled inadmissible hearsay. The jury did not actually hear any of the information relating to how Christina suspected Michael or the fear she had. This was only mentioned during the pre-trial hearing.
Why does it seem very dodgy?
What, the trial or...
Yeah.
I mean, I do take the point if it's hearsay. But the fact that one of them was an agricultural consultant, so there was some official capacity there.
Yeah.
I know it's not technically, it's not strictly related to what he's dealing with, but also her solicitor.
Mm.
I would like to think that a solicitor, you know, you're confiding in them.
Yeah.
There's that confidentiality. Surely he'd be able to speak to some degree on it. But no, it was all ruled as inadmissible.
Mm.
When Regina Donoghue, Christina's friend, took the stand, she spoke of a, quote, torrent of verbal abuse that Michael had directed at Christina on her birthday in 2017. This incident left Christina visibly upset, and Regina was shocked and scared by the interaction. After this, she would only visit Christina when Michael was not on the property. And even when she did go to visit, Christina would immediately lock the door after she'd enter the home. Quote, I was very concerned for Chrissy, but she was still determined to live out her life in her home. She also spoke about the day of Christina's death. Quote, then I am wondering, what could have happened had I arrived to Chrissy's side before Francis had disarmed Michael? All these actions and deeds have put me where I find myself now, living a life of what ifs and why didn't I?
Yeah, he'd have probably killed her and then shot himself.
He's definitely had a few comments directed towards Regina and her family. Yes. It seems as though he felt like, as Christina's friend, she was interfering.
He's sticking your nose in.
Even at the trial, Michael couldn't keep his mouth shut. As Regina left the witness stand, Michael took the opportunity to call her a cunt as she walked past him.
That's blasphemy. Can't do that. You've just sworn on Bible and that. You can't be doing stuff like that in court.
Well, here's the thing. I can imagine that Michael definitely feels a certain way towards Regina. Not only because she's speaking out about his cruel behaviour towards Christina, but also because Christina left her land to Regina.
Hmm. Okay. Thing is, the way he was behaving in the courtroom, wouldn't, like, if you were on a jury and you witnessed that, wouldn't you be like, you know, even if you were very level-headed about everything else what's been said in court, and then you saw that, you'd be like, what's going on there? What was that?
Yeah, I think he said it rather quietly.
I don't know. I think if I was sat on the jury, he could have whispered it under his breath, and I'd be like, I heard that.
Fucking excuse me.
Fucking heard that.
Say it again. Yeah. In April of 2019, Regina attempted to access the land, but ran into Michael, who she said acted aggressively towards her. When she entered Christina's home, she described the house as having been ransacked and some items had been taken. So it appears that even after her death, there was no respect for Christina or her belongings.
Yeah.
After Michael's little indiscretion directed towards Regina in the court, his defense described his behavior as, quote, wholly inappropriate, wrong, and shouldn't have happened. They also asked that his bail not be revoked, as it would pose difficulties in providing advice and instructions to Michael. The judge stated, quote, calling anyone a name like that is disgraceful. You should be ashamed of yourself. You are a very foolish man, on bail for a murder charge. I was going to put you in custody because I have a duty to protect witnesses in this court and ensure that they are treated with respect and courtesy. But given the pleas of his defence, the judge decided against Michael being placed in custody, but did caution him, quote, if you do that again, If you look at a witness to intimidate them or treat them with disrespect, you will go into custody regardless of the repercussions. When Regina returned to the stand, the judge apologised to her and said, quote, "I'm sorry you had to experience that. Giving evidence is difficult enough without having to deal with that insult."
If I were Regina, I'd be like, that's nothing what comes out of his fucking mouth.
I mean, I could take a fucking guess. Christina's solicitor also spoke at the trial. He said that once Michael had been told to stop with his threatening behaviour, Michael rang the solicitor and hurled abuse at him.
Fuck's sake.
Quote, "He was extremely angry and abusive on the phone to me, and I couldn't speak because he was in such a rage. He didn't give me a chance to respond." He went on to say that he was shocked at the level of anger that Michael had. Michael then called him back 45 minutes later and apologised for his previous phone call.
Too little, too late.
I mean, I feel like that's one of those things where Mike's like, oh, let the mask slip a bit too much there.
Yeah.
Now, when it came to a verdict, the judge reminded the jury that there was no doubt Michael had caused the death of Christina. But to return a verdict of murder, they must be satisfied that at the time or the, quote, nanosecond before that, he intended to kill or cause serious injury to Christina.
Do you want my take on it? So I'm not 100% he ran her over on purpose, but he left her to die.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she died because of him. Like,
because of his actions,
He is guilty of her death. So, like, yeah, like I said, I'm not 100% if he ran her over on purpose. He probably did.
Mm-hmm.
But the delay in everything and, you know, the excuse he didn't know you could get an ambulance by ringing 999, all that is deliberate. So, guilty.
Well, the jury took just under 15 hours to return a verdict. Michael was found not guilty of murder. But he was found guilty of manslaughter due to his gross negligence.
So what's that? In Ireland, 3 years?
That's headline of eight.
What?
Headline of eight.
Still do four.
Well, when it came to sentencing, it was taken into consideration that Michael had no previous convictions and psychological reports stated that Michael had since expressed regret and that he was, quote, not in the highest rank of intelligence. Red to fucking filth. On the 26th of June, 2023, Michael was sentenced to 6 years in prison.
So he's done three? Oh, good guess that.
No one said he's done three.
It's always split an eighth.
The judge said that had Michael thought about it at all, he would have realised the risks of reversing the vehicle across the yard while his view was obstructed. Quote, "He didn't think of her at all, an elderly lady, his aunt, living alone." See, I personally think if certain pieces of information hadn't been ruled inadmissible, we'd be looking at a very different outcome.
Mm.
Michael is currently appealing his sentence, which is hilarious given that he was sentenced to only six due to mitigating factors.
Yeah. And how long has he been inside?
He was sentenced in June 23. Okay. I think he'd be best suited to just keep quiet and get on with his time.
Yeah.
Regina Donoghue said of her friend Christina, quote, "Chrissy treated me like the daughter she never had. And I looked up to her as if she was my second mother. As female farmers, we had a huge mutual respect for each other, and I will never forget Chrissy for that." She also stated, "My dear friend Chrissy may be physically gone, but her memory will live with me for as long as I live. My vision of her and her loving pet Bradley enjoying the peace. The village I call home has been destroyed by the callous greed of one person, Michael Scott." Well, Neil, that is the death of Christina, Chrissy, Tracy. What do you think? I mean, you kind of let me know along the way, but to sum up,
do you have
any closing statements?
To sum up, he is guilty.
Well, is it a case of gross negligence that resulted in tragedy, or do you think there is more sinister intentions?
Either way, I class it as murder. So he either ran her over to kill her on purpose, or he didn't know she was there and he hit her. And then he thought, ooh, leave her to die, and then I can get this. So, yes, it was sinister. It's murder either way.
No, but in the eyes of the court, you can't just... I'm not talking about your opinion of what you think it should be. If you were on the jury...
Yeah. I said guilty.
You think murder?
Yeah.
Bear in mind, you don't know about the dog. And you don't know about Christina worrying for her safety. Mm. Would you still go with murder?
Well, he called Regina a cunt.
He did, yeah.
Did Bradley ever come back?
No. We don't know what happened to Bradley. We don't know if Bradley was killed or...
Renard.
Well, that would be killed. But, I mean, the way I look at it is the cruelty shown to her by Michael, the abusive way he was said to have spoken to her, leaving her home with rubbish building up, turning off the oil to her home, trying to manipulate her for his own gain. It's all absolutely horrific. But let's not forget about his interference with his uncle's will.
Mm.
Do you know, there's not just with Christina, this whole greed around trying to get what he can. And, you know, especially when it involves land and the further profit he can make.
Mm.
But the behaviour leading up to her death that really bothers me, like you've just mentioned, is the disappearance of Bradley. Assuming it was him, he did that not only to manipulate her, but to really hurt her.
Yeah, destroy her.
And if it is the case that he actually killed the dog, he truly is a nasty little fuck.
Mm. And foul-mouthed.
Well, yes, but aren't we all? I can't really. Not the time, the place, Michael, but...
I don't know. Like, I hadn't even heard of this. How have I not heard of this?
Well, I didn't hear about it in the news when it first happened. It was only recently when I was looking for a case to cover.
What, and with his appeals, it came up?
No. You know the way I said to you sometimes, like, there's something will trigger me. I'm like, I wonder, has there been a murder involving this topic or this item or whatever?
Yeah.
And a tractor went by in the field behind us.
Fuck off.
And I looked up murders involving tractors. And yeah, that's why we're here today. Listen to this case. Believe it or not.
So someone's put it down as murder.
Well, he was up for murder. A judge found, well, not a judge, a jury found him not guilty. Mm. But lads, let us know what you think. I really do think it would have been a very different outcome had the jury heard about her dog, heard about her fears.
Yeah.
And the rest of it.
Mm. So, oddity.
Oddity. Harlequin ichthyosis.
Harley Quinn.
Harlequin ichthyosis.
Okay.
Are you familiar, Neil?
I am with the Harley Quinn part. Are such people fixated on Harley Quinn?
No, not so much.
Oh.
Harlequin ichthyosis is a rare genetic skin disorder which affects newborns.
Okay.
Well, it's been a while since we've done a rare condition, isn't it?
There's a reason for that.
Oh, I don't think it's interesting we should know about these things.
Well, I'm past newborn stage.
Yeah.
So I don't have to worry about that.
But it's like having a medical encyclopedia. You just open it up and learn something new each day, no?
Okay.
So Harlequin ichthyosis was first documented by Reverend Oliver Hart in 1750, and it occurs in roughly one in every 300,000 births. A baby born with this condition has thick, hard skin, which splits and forms deep cracks. And because of the tension of the skin, it affects the shape of their facial features by pulling on their eyelids and mouths. So it's almost, their eyes and their mouths will kind of almost appear sort of inverted.
Oh.
Hmm. As well as the skin on their chests, which can restrict their ability to breathe and eat. Now, anyone who suffers from the likes of eczema or psoriasis can tell you how difficult it can be when the skin barrier is disrupted. It can be incredibly painful and can also put you at risk of infections. So you can imagine the risk of infection is, of course, a very big concern for those with Harlequin ichthyosis.
Yeah, so it's like eczema times 10.
Times 1,000.
Okay.
So, of course, infection is a massive risk. along with difficulties regulating body temperature and dehydration. Now, once a baby reaches about 1 month of age, they will start to shed the thicker plates of skin they are born with, and their skin becomes more red and scaly. Previously, it would have been rare for a baby to survive this condition, but with the advancements in treatment options, babies affected by this condition have a much better chance of entering childhood and even reaching adulthood.
See, you know, with this condition, is it as soon as the baby's born, it's like, it's got it?
Yeah, so obviously they can do testing to diagnose the condition, but generally speaking, yes, it's a visual diagnosis.
Okay.
It's quite clear. One study concluded that 44% of babies born with this condition died, with the most common cause of death being sepsis, respiratory failure, or both.
Or infections.
Well, sepsis.
Oh, is that infections?
Yeah, blood poisoning.
Okay.
But with early introduction of oral retinoids, there was an increase to an 83% survival rate.
Okay. It's going in the right direction.
Definitely a better chance of survival, but it is a truly awful condition for a person to have to deal with. And it's lifelong care.
Right.
You know, you're going to have a dermatologist. You're going to have to go through care.
Yeah.
All your life. And you also have to remember, it's not just your skin. There's other knock-on effects such as alopecia and limited mobility due to the tension on your skin.
Right.
But yeah, harlequin ichthyosis, an absolute bollocks of a disorder.
That's one way to describe it.
It is, though. It's fucking brutal.
Yeah.
And it's what went into my mind, of course, obviously the poor baby, and they can't obviously express and say, I'm in pain, this is happening to me. And then as the parent, to watch your child in such discomfort and pain and not be able to do anything to help them. Brutal.
You got to feel for parents as well with medical bills. Like, that's going to put a massive strain on them. You know, I don't think they'd get that much help if it's somewhere like America.
Well, the other thing as well is because it's so rare, I wonder would you have to search for a specialist to care for the condition?
Well, you hear about that a lot. Like, you know, for a certain condition, there's a doctor in Switzerland and then they have to go to Switzerland. Speedway riders, a lot of them, they'll fly to Poland to get treated in Poland so they can get back on the bike quicker.
Well, I tell you what, after looking into this condition, you will not hear me complain about my eczema again. Thank you so much for listening. Find us on Patreon, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. If you have a case suggestion, or maybe even your own story, email us at mortalmusingspodcast@gmail.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.